At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hi everyone, it's Maya. I just got back from Santa Barbara where I saw Jerry Slaff's incredible new play, Lies. Jerry's a fellow person who stutters and longtime Proud Stutter supporter. I'm also excited to share that Proud Stutter is hosting a fundraiser. You might have heard about this on October 9th in San Francisco for our upcoming documentary. The evening will include a preview of new film footage and a first look at our sensory-friendly screening pilots. Listeners get 50% off tickets with the code PROUD50 with a capital P at checkout. We'll be announcing our speakers in the coming weeks, so keep an eye on my Instagram for updates. That's at Maya Chupkov. We also shared a major update on the film in our latest newsletter. If you didn't see that, you can sign up for our newsletter at proudstutter.org or check out the show notes. I also included the link to our latest newsletter in our show notes. All right, now on to the show. I'm Maya Chupkov, and I'm a woman who stutters. Welcome to Proud Stutter, a show about stuttering and embracing verbal diversity in an effort to change how we talk about it, one conversation at a time. Welcome back to Proud Stutter. I'm your host, Maya Chupkov. Today we have Dylan Pruitt. He's a doctor, he has a PhD, and he's also a person who stutters and a researcher. Dylan, thanks so much for being on Proud Stutter.
Yes, thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah, so I reached out to you because when I saw your study, I was just like, this is so groundbreaking. I feel like I always have all these questions about where my stutter comes from, and your research just opens up a lot of doors into like discovering that question so much more. So first, like, thank you for that. I've always been like fascinated with stuttering and genetics, but before we get too much into your research, I'd love to learn about you. When I learned that you stutter and we're on this research team, I was like, yay, thank you. So yeah, I'd love it if you can talk about like your stuttering journey. And yeah, if that was always a curiosity of yours when you were younger, of like where like your stutter, like how, like where it stems from.
I started stuttering around age 3. It wasn't something I was initially super aware of. By the time I got to elementary school, I started speech therapy. And for the most part, my stuttering was fairly mild, but was still something that was there. And unfortunately around, sixth grade, as you know, kind of moving into the teen years and going into junior high, this kind of teasing got a little bit worse and became something I was much more self-conscious of. And so it became something that I was really motivated too high and kind of shy away from. And it was something that if I really, avoided certain things or spoke in certain ways, I could kind of get around most instances, but there were often times where that wasn't the case. And so I would get caught in, these long repetitions or blocks, and they would, I think, take people by surprise sometimes, even if they were some of my peers that kind of knew me, because it wasn't something that they were used to hearing all of the time. With that being said, I was still very active in clubs and sports and was honor society president. And so I was having to do kind of a lot of public speaking. And that was always very anxiety inducing for me because I'd have to, I don't, well, I guess didn't really have to, but it felt like I had to do all of this practice to try to get myself through these situations. And even with, this preparation and practice, there were still many, many moments of embarrassment where, especially at that age, I was having a hard time with it. And as I moved from high school into college, the King's Speech had just come out. And that was kind of the first time that I had really seen stuttering portrayed in, the larger media. I did kind of live through the era of the speakeasy, delayed auditory feedback device was featured on Oprah, and that was maybe like 2004, 2005. So it maybe wasn't the first time that it was in the media, but it felt a moment for me that was, kind of acknowledging that this is something that is a part of my life and that is something that I am going to have to acknowledge and live with, and to turn away from it consistently was not the best way to go through it. I volunteered in a stuttering research lab at the University of Washington with Dr. Ludo Max. And really talked with him about his experiences in research, specifically stuttering research, and asked about the field. And he kind of gave me a bird's eye view of, kind of what's known in the stuttering world, what's open questions, and what are some new frontiers. At the same time, I was also working in a wet lab space, doing genetics work, completely unrelated, but I was interested in what we knew about the genetics of stuttering because there was a lot of evidence that, it tends to run in families. And I don't know if this was shortly before or shortly after, kind of the time of the first candidate gene st studies were coming out. And I realized that this was kind of a new area and one that wasn't really fully explored, and that in the sort of communication sciences and disorder space, genetics isn't really a core part of that. And then in the genetic space, communication disorders aren't really as much of a part of that in a lot of ways either. And so I wanted to kind of pursue a research path that was joining that together in some way. And so I majored in biology and speech and hearing sciences, and then applied to graduate school for a PhD in hearing and speech sciences, and kind of to continue that work. And so it's been a long journey for sure. I was just recently hired as an assistant professor at Florida State University around the time that this article came out. And so it feels like kind of a culmination of these goals that I've had that have motivated me for nearly 15 years now.
I'm always curious about like stuttering research and how to kind of make the case that it's important. You know, like we're you know, the study says we're 1% of the population. I think there's more of us than that. But I'm wondering, like, do you feel like you're still needed to educate a lot of people about stuttering and why it's important in academia and other spaces? Like, what has kind of your sense been about that over time?
I still feel that it's something that requires a lot of education because I think in general people are vaguely familiar with it. They're like, oh yeah, that's a thing, you know, that's when you repeat words and they kind of think they have a understanding, but it's mostly limited. And even in research, like if I go to a genetics conference and I'm presenting on my research and applying these kind of well-known analyses but focusing on people who stutter, people are kind of like, oh, stuttering, I never thought about that. And they're like, oh, well, you've found genetic associations with this. And so they're kind of like surprised, pleasantly, I guess you could say, but it is sort of like, yes, this is something that is sort of a, I don't want to say underserved area, but it's something that doesn't grab the headlines like other sort of larger public health fields might. And then, kind of on the flip side, if I'm presenting at more of a communication science and disorders field, it's sort of like, oh, well, why are you doing these genetic things? Is that going to help, in the clinic when we're working with clients tomorrow? And it's like, well, no, not likely, but this is sort of like a foundation that hopefully leads to a greater understanding that might one day lead to changes in a lot of things. So I kind of think of it as like a bottom up versus a top down type model, and trying to be in a space where you're bridging those things together.
I love that framing. I feel like that is how we all should be thinking about stuttering and stuttering research is like, you like, yeah, there has to be like, yeah, both approaches because, like for me, understanding like the possibilities and like understanding the science more, like I love that because then I feel more educational about myself and it's not like it's not so much of like an emotional thing where it's like, oh, why am I like this? But it's like, no, there's actually like scientific evidence that explains why I'm like this. And so it's kind of like a good peace of mind thing. But to your point too, yeah, the more we know about it from this level, it'll probably influence, you know, treatments down the line and how we think of it down the re line and things like that. So, as far as like making this genetic study possible, one, like how long did this take and did you have to do a lot of like fundraising to get it done and published and off the ground?
So it was a very long journey, for reasons that are maybe not as interesting as they might sound. I was grateful to work with a professor, that had already done some research in this field, and Dr. Piper Bielo, at Vanderbilt, applied for competitive access to the 23andMe data through a program called, let me look up the exact name here, through a program called the 23andMe Research Innovation Collaborations Program. And so that program pairs up academic researchers with 23andMe scientists to perform analyses. And the academic researchers can access de-identified aggregated data from the 23andMe research cohort. So those are the 23andMe participants who selected that they consent to have their data be used for research purposes. And this was, we were especially excited to get access to this data set because during COVID, our research team had a lot of difficulty with collecting in-person clinical data. And so a question on the 23andMe Health Survey asks, have you ever had a stammer or stutter? And generally, information on stuttering and other communication disorders are not included in the large scale publicly accessible biobanks like the UK Biobank. So we were excited to see this question on that sur on that sur on that survey. So we had the opportunity to harness the vast size of 23andMe to explore further genetic analyses of stuttering. And while we were awarded access, there was a period of time where basically the university lawyers and the 23andMe lawyers had to hash it out. And I forget what the sticking points were, but it had to do with, who had ownership of what and, kind of what that means. They worked it out, but that took a little while. Then we, went through the process of actually, doing the analyses and writing those results up. And then we went through a lot of revisions at the journal that asked us to do some additional analyses to clarify what we meant and sort of to, change our framing of the question in certain ways. And I think it ultimately made it a stronger paper, but it meant that not only did we have to go back and forth with the journal, but then we also had to go back and forth with 23andMe to get permission from them to make these changes. And so it was a lot of work by a lot of people over a long period of time. And so when this finally was published, I think we were just all kind of taking a breath and, kind of were relieved that it was finally at this point because we'd gone through the excitement and the disappointment so many times that we were just really ready to say like, oh, all right, it's now finally out there and live, and we feel pretty good about the product that we, put out.
Oh my God, that sounds so much like making a documentary. So how many years are we talking about?
Gosh, I mean, it was in review at the journal for I think 2 years. And so it was probably
Wow.
at least 2 years before that when we were having to do kind of the bulk of the crafting of the manuscript. And so yes, that's pretty unusual. I think that in a lot of times these higher profile journals, they have, a backlog of applications or, submissions, and it takes them a while to work through that. And then if it's something that they're interested in, they'll let you know, which is exciting because that's kind of like a thumbs up that things are looking good. But even then, it still has to go back and forth a lot. And so we were very excited that Nature Genetics, which is in the genetics community, a very high profile journal, was excited and wanting to feature this paper.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Yeah, that is huge. And yeah, the fact that you got it in Nature is congrats. That's like incredible. It's like the top of the top. So that's amazing. So much exposure to stuttering as well, which I love to see. Can you talk about, because I'm so curious, like some of the examples of how you like reframe certain things, like just give like an example.
A lot of it was pretty technical, that it was some of the statistical software tools that we used to look at stuttering within populations. There was debate about which tools were best and how much could be combined and how much should or could be stratified. That was one of the areas that we had a lot of discussion on. So we recognized that a lot of sort of these large-scale genetic studies typically are focused on European ancestry individuals. And that is sort of an artifact of how a lot of these tools were created over time, where they are either prospectively recruiting or asking for volunteers. And basically, they garner a very non-diverse pool. And so that is going to limit the power for any conclusions that you can make with about individuals from non-European ancestries. And so knowing that we had such a large data set, we said, hey, look, we want to do our best to, even if we're not totally powered to find significant findings, we want to say if somebody is interested in using our data in follow-up studies, that it is available there for those folks. And so we felt that the way that we did that was leveraging the sample size that we have for what we thought was a good approach for doing this kind of stratified analyses that then we meta analyze things from there. So that's kind of the more technical journal side of it. But even beyond what we were asked to change, it was just very slow to move it from one stage to the next even when things were getting a thumbs up, that
Right.
thumbs up just took a little bit of time.
Well, that's super interesting about, and it makes a lot of sense that, a lot of this data, it's like you said, perspective and volunteering, to share your genetic data with the European descent. Do you see a path where we might be able to get at like the non-European d descent? I'm sure it would take a lot more like intentionality, with specific communities, but I'm wondering if like you've thought of that or others on your team are like trying to think about how like ways to kind of get at that those
I
communities.
think at this point that's a pretty well-known problem within the genetics community. And so there are different projects that have started in the past, maybe 3 to 4 years, especially where they are looking to fill some of those gaps by going out and finding diverse cohorts to include and to kind of build that from the ground up so that it becomes a more inclusive resource in the future. The All of Us project is one of those attempts. And I think there's others that as they grow over time, the goal is to get a lot better at doing that kind of work.
And so can you give like an overview of some of the of some of the findings you in case people weren't able to look at, the paper and are just kind of listening to this for the first time about your study? Can you give like a summary of some of the top findings? I know, you found overlap between stuttering and like autism, depression, things like that. So yeah, if you can kind of dig into the findings a little more, and what sort of the findings reveal about the brain and our
Yeah,
genetics.
so we conducted genome-wide association studies, which is a type of analysis where we are looking at the association between genetic variants called single nucleotide polymorphisms or SNPs with a trait. And our trait in this case was stuttering. And we conducted primary GWAS that were looking across sex and across genetic ancestry. And then we also did meta analyses following from that. We had over 99,000 cases and over 1 million controls. And we identified 57 distinct signals that mapped to 48 unique genes. And none of these genes had been previously reported in the literature. So we were pretty excited by that. I think that some of our previous work, we had seen that we had a lot of signals that just hadn't really reached significance. But that appeared to show that stuttering is a polygenic trait, meaning that there are many genes that contribute to the trait, and it's not determined by any single gene. And this is pretty common for a lot of traits, such as type 2 diabetes, such as height, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's. Those are traits that tend to be influenced by many, many genes. One of the top hits among males and in other secondary analyses mapped to the gene VRK2. And VRK2 has been implicated in other studies that were investigating traits that had been associated with stuttering, such as language, musical beat synchronization, sleep, epilepsy, and depression. And so the fact that this single gene is involved in all these different traits that have overlapping features with stuttering, we thought really pointed to an interesting area for further research. So our one of our next kind of projects is following up on the potential links between VRK2 and a range of these traits, and that is motivating future studies for us.
Is there like something beyond stuttering? Like, obviously, you being a person who stutters, like, you're motivated to, want to understand and work on stuttering. Are there other things kind of motivating you to like continue this research?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a huge opportunity even beyond stuttering to apply a lot of tools that are generally pretty common in biomedical research and turn the lens on to communication disorders. I think that when we look at things like childhood apraxia of speech, or developmental language disorder, there's a lot of like really interesting science out there that we're still exploring these questions that if we had better tools, more inclusive data sets, we could really start to move the field forward. And so I would love to partner with other people who are interested in this to use biobanks and electronic health records and genetic analyses to say, hey, what are some things that we can learn by using these tools for the field? I think with a lot of the large language models that are coming out, there's a better ability to do some of that. And I really hope and advocate for the inclusion of communication disorders within those type of studies to say, hey, let's not kind of forget about this field because it is somewhat out of sight, out of mind. And part of the problem is that a lot of these are really in the field of biomedical research, and a lot of that is kind of motivated by university hospital settings and medical doctors. And for communication disorders, those are conditions that are typically diagnosed by speech language pathologists. And so they tend to be diagnosed and treated within schools, sometimes in private clinics. And so that never really makes its way back into the sort of medical setting. It doesn't mean that those people aren't impacted in certain ways, but it just is a lot more tangential to have to ask those types of questions if they're not the primary cause for concern during a medical visit. That being said, I really think that understanding somebody's communication skills and traits can really impact their medical care. So I think it would be awesome to have something where providers are asking or acknowledging, kind of what are your communication needs, whether that's speech, hearing, language, whatever they can do to meet patients where they're at, and that might get them to elicit better information from their patients, and it might help them provide better information to their patients.
I love that. 'Cause that, yeah, that's so true. Like there is kind of a disconnect between speech pathology and also like the medical setting. And I completely agree with you. I think that should definitely be more embedded in the healthcare system. So it's like amazing that you're kind of have that mindset in connection with your research and what it can unlock in the broader system, I guess. So yeah, that's I feel like I want to have like a separate conversation with you about a bunch of stuff, but yeah, so I guess to close out the interview, is there anything we haven't covered that you wanted to share, about anything, like it can be about your own stuttering journey, anything about your research we haven't covered yet?
I really just want to say that our work is not about pathologizing stuttering. In my view, what we're trying to do is to demystify it. Stuttering is a beautiful and, in my view, underappreciated example of neurodiversity, and our work helps us understand the genetic script behind that diversity. So the ultimate goal is to try to empower by reducing stigma and tailoring support. So really, it's about better understanding the biological underpinnings of this particular form of neurodiversity. And I think that our findings could really open the door to a more nuanced approach to support. So instead of a one-size-fits-all approach, we could more move towards more personalized support strategies that could lead to more effective and compassionate interventions if and when a person who stutters seeks those out. Yeah, I think that really then, rather than being the final answer for genetics and stuttering, this research really blows the doors open for new approaches and to build a foundation for further study. So that is my hope, is that this is the first step to a larger research endeavor that we get to explore in the coming years.
And that's it for this episode of Proud Stutter. This episode of Proud Stutter was produced and edited by me, Maya Chupkov. Our music was composed by Augusto Deniz, and our artwork by Mara Ezekiel and Noah Chupkov. If you have an idea or want to be part of a future episode, visit us at www.proudstutter.com. And if you like the show, you can leave us a review wherever you are listening to this podcast. Want to leave us a voicemail? Check out our show notes for the number to call in. More importantly, tell your friends to listen too. Until we meet again, thanks for listening. Be proud and be you.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.